You should know that voice. That's the voice of Ruth Brown. Unfortunately, we have to preface her name with the words, the late Ruth Brown, who was a powerhouse by herself. And I remembered every time she came to New York City and was featured in a Broadway production, I had to have my tickets. There was no question about it. And she had a way, she was such a tour de force that by herself she could carry a show and keep the audience riveted. She died on November the 17th, 2006, in Las Vegas, where she was living at the time, from complications of a stroke and a heart attack. She was 78 years old. But it is not an easy matter to forget Ruth Brown. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Treece Lead. And today we're going to be talking about reassessing where we are. I got into that mood over the weekend because, you know, for a while now, it's been an uncomfortable feeling, not knowing where exactly we are. And by we, I mean as a society. And people could make an argument that it applies to the whole world. But when these kinds of feelings overtake you, you can't help but be very personal about it. And you ask, well, what more am I supposed to do? What am I expected to do that's different from what I've been doing all this time? And the answers don't come easily or at all. What are we supposed to be doing? Some people would say, well, we're supposed to be doing what our forebears did, and that is just put one foot in front of the other and keep walking, trying to make the best of a situation of which we really don't have much control. We find ourselves just sandbagged by rules and laws that are new to us, make no sense, that slam us up against a wall, and we don't see the possibility of, you know, a bright new tomorrow. It's not there. It's not written in the books. We don't see it. And yet we have to continue. We have to find a way to get from Monday to Tuesday and from Tuesday to Wednesday and so forth. And that is easily said, not easily done. So today I thought I would ask you a couple of questions just to put it in your mind, because I know I'm not the only one thinking this way. I'm not the only one worried about what is in store for this nation. Not just for me, but for the nation. What's going to become of us? Where are things going? The real frightening indication is what we're seeing coming out of Congress. Who are these people? They act like they have no training. They have no education. They act like ruffians. And that's become the way. Well, it started when Trump got into office, really. A general decline in the way that people conduct themselves in public office, those people having much to do with the running of this country. And you wonder, well, what's next? And would I be able, would I be prepared to cope with what's coming down the pike next? I can barely hang in now. We've lost something. What is it that we've lost? What is it that we need to steady ourselves again? That doesn't have to do with material things. What is it that is missing from the society? We're seeing shootings and killings and crime going up, and it suggests a society out of order and with no easy plan of return to a logical way of life. We can't be certain about anything anymore, except uncertainty. We literally have been reshaped psychologically to accept as normal that things change and will change dramatically without notice. And we just have to make adjustments on the spot. In the end, it's not the best way to live. You don't have the luxury as you did just a couple of years ago, but you felt, well, you know, things are a little tough, but you kind of know where you're going. You have a job. It doesn't pay you an ideal salary, but you have a job. Your children are doing the best that they can in school, even though when you look closely at what they're doing in school, you go, what happened? How did we reach down to this level? And we're supposed to regard this as education? This is what education is now? The changes are happening dramatically and with incredible speed. And many of us are feeling more and more lost. We don't have the anchors, or we feel we don't have the anchors that we used to, that used to help us adjust, you know, our plans accordingly, our plans of life. It's not that way anymore. I don't know, we could make a case that it ought to be. Things change. Life changes. Change is constant. But I don't like this kind of change that we've been experiencing. It doesn't reflect the kind of change that I was hoping we would have. Nothing seems certain except uncertainty. That's where we are. And it's a cutthroat kind of existence that we have. And of course, you can see the effect, the erosion of this notion of community, of family even. So I worry about where we are going or where we have come from, you know, because change is happening so fast. And we are expected to adjust accordingly. Is there such a thing as your own personal hopes and dreams and aspirations anymore? Is there a thing that we could still identify as your own personal or your family's quest for a better future, and what you're in the process of doing and putting together to achieve that? Do we have the kind of hope that whatever it is you envision is doable and achievable? Or do you believe something else has come into play, but we don't understand it? We don't understand it at all. I don't know. All I know is that if only by force of habit, we're on the treadmill still. Is that progress? I don't know. But we need to start asking some pretty important questions of ourselves, individually and collectively, because it seems as if we are losing our grounding and losing it rapidly. All right, so I have some questions. If you're willing to entertain them and answer or put something before us that we can use as a point of reference. But essentially, they have to do, these questions have to do with how we are changing. Not necessarily for the better, but we're changing. And we're told to hold on and change. Figure a way to cope. Because whether we like it or not, the changes are coming. They have already landed in our lives, whether we choose to believe it or not. There's going to be more. So what will serve as our rock? What will serve as the steadying force in our lives? What would serve as our new approach to what we consider to be a culture, a national culture? What is going on? I know these questions are sounding more and more vague, because I think we're feeling the sense that life has become more and more vague, not very certain. Things change rapidly. And if only for our survival, we have to change rapidly along with it, whether it makes sense or not. Is that a good place to be? Would a society operating with those values achieve much? Is there a way to, in your own life, you say, okay, we have to stop. We have to reevaluate. We have to come to some conclusions about how we will live, but more importantly, how we will not live. Okay. 888-874-4888 is the famous magic number. You should know it by heart. I'm not going to pre-screen these questions. I'm just going to ask you when you call in. And we'll deal with it as you get it. We'll see what comes out of that process. What are you thinking? What are you thinking of doing? How do you think you will have to change to manage your life? That's a very deep and daunting question, but we all have to think about it somehow. 888-874-4888. Who's going to be first? That's always the issue, isn't it? I don't want to be first, but it's no big deal. You're among friends. You're among supporters. We'll hold your hand because we need it too. Okay. Ed from Queens, you're on the air, and you get us started today.
Good afternoon, you two. How are you?
Okay, Ed, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, you know, my customary salutation. Me and my thumbs are hanging on.
Okay.
Pertaining to your question or your outline for today's show topic, as it were, well, you know where I'm at. I think you heard, or I've called your program enough and discussed it. I believe we're in the end of the American empire, and you have to act. As far as I'm concerned, I have to act according to my personal beliefs and make some hard decisions. My decision has, for me and my family, is in the next 3 to 5 years, I can't see myself staying in this country. So I've made preparations on the island of St. Martin. There's some land there that's bequeathed to my family through my grandfather, and I've been working with a couple of cousins on that, and that's a long-term plan. I don't have any faith in America. I don't see America as progressing to any greatness in the next 10 or 15 years. On a national level, I see China and Russia combining to form some type of alliance. I see American military might as being passe. And outside of a nuclear war, if some madman doesn't get into the picture with that, I hope they won't. Geopolitically, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think that the world is interested in making a profit. And I think that's where the eyes are going. Everybody's looking towards the East. On a global level, on a national level, there's a lot of dissension in this country. There's a lot of people talking, but there aren't people listening. And, you know, we could be on the verge of a civil conflict, which I don't think is too far afield, especially if the political landscape pans out like I fear it might, with a reappearance of the orange man and the inaction of the political elite, quote-unquote elite, as it stands now, the inability to do good politics, the inability to have good government. So I don't see a future. I tended to the decline of the Roman Empire after the Pax Romana. Rome lasted for another 200 or 300 years until the Gauls and the Ottoman Turks took over. And, you know, I think that so America's going down the same route. We might have a couple 50 or 100 good years, but after that, it's going to be a memory.
Personally, do you have any feelings about that, or is it just for you a matter of pragmatism? You see this on the horizon, and you are preparing yourself to move preemptively based on what you believe you see.
I mean, I don't have any melancholy, emotional feelings towards the decline of the empire. Empires fall. I mean, I've learned that as being a tertiary student of history. Empires fall. They rise, they have their time, and they fall from the Egyptian empire to the British empire. And America followed the same track. I mean, you can only do bad for so long until the moral arc of the universe comes and bites you in the butt. And that's what's happening. On the world scene, America's a joke. China's stepping into every nation, developing infrastructure wage, the one belt, one road policy by the president of China is well on its way. And the Chinese have a definite history of setting goals and meeting them, irregardless of what you think of them, what you think of the internal social political ideology. They set goals and they make them. And the world is, resources are short, and the world is ready for somebody to step on the front and be an economic power. And they set themselves up for that. And America is not taking care of itself. We've got politicians that don't listen. We're going through a whatever you want to call this with the coronavirus and the variants of disease, and no one has even made a stand for universal health care. That's still a problem with all of the sickness we're dealing with. Housing, student loan debt, all of the real threats to internal security are being ignored, and we're concentrating on garbage. We're making, our leaders are making animes about cutting each other's heads off and political speeches sanctioning people for garbage. I mean, Congress has had a long history of nonsense, but it's just, when are you going to grow up? When are you going to face the challenges? I mean, the world is on fire. The country is falling apart, and we can't even have the discussions addressing what needs to be done to rectify the problem. I give up, and I'm ready to get out.
Okay, well, you anticipated my question. I was about to ask you, are you hopeful just the same that maybe things could go in the direction that you're thinking?
Well, there will be some iteration of it. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. Nothing. A country this large will not crash and burn in the next 10 or 15 years. It's like an ocean liner. To turn an ocean liner, it's a process. You have to start, plot your turn, control your engines, reduce your speed. And we're in the process of crashing. But no one is stepping to the helm to say, look, more people of good conscience, let's rally, let's get together. Let's push some of these fundamental changes that we need to make the society better and to make it adaptable for the new millennium, for the new world. Nobody's doing that. They're playing old politics. We got a 70, 80-year-old man in the White House who can barely stand up. I mean, come on. it's pathetic. The leadership is not even up to par, and there's no one on the horizon.
Wow. I can see. Thank you. Thanks so much for getting us started and with this focus, because I think you're starting us off with a realistic focus. People may not be talking about it, but I have a feeling that it is what they're thinking and what they're feeling. But are the people ready to stand up and do something about it? We don't know, but I thank you very much for your contribution today.
Thank you. Thank you. Get ready. Time is running out. Time is definitely running out.
Neil from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Brooklyn. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We have a really bad connection.
All right.
You're not coming through very clearly, Neil, I'm sorry to say. Okay, the engineer is going to call you and see if we can fix that, but we can't hear you because it sounds just like a jumble of sound. So hang in there as you await the call. Now, we got a first inkling in our first call that what Ed from Queens was talking about was in fact a sentiment that many people have and are holding close to the vest. You know, they don't want to talk about these things in public. There is nothing encouraging people to express these thoughts in public. And yet, this is the stuff that makes a society. How do people feel about their country, about what is happening, about whether they are part of the forward thrust of society, or whether they feel completely left out? This is what constitutes the sentiment of the people. I know, I don't have the, you know, the numbers or anything like that. I haven't done a survey. But I'm just telling you from my own interactions with people. There is a very large group of people who don't see a good future. And they're doubting it every day more and more that we're headed in the right direction. But as Ed said, they have a feeling nobody's listening to them, or that they can't get anybody to move in an affirmative way on things that I would categorize as things that are logical, things that are at a time like this that people would normally think. This is not an extraordinary situation. It's been building. And, you know, the people who are in charge of our political life do not want the responsibility and can't handle the responsibility, frankly, of helping people through a situation like this. It's just not feasible. And even if it were feasible, it's not the kind of engagement that you want. You wouldn't consider this progressive work. People would start attacking you and saying you're trying to discourage people and bring them down. Marcus from Wisconsin, where are you right now in this maelstrom?
Thank you, Utrice. I'll blow on this one. you're asking a sort of a philosophical, almost metaphysical question here, and I'll tag on to a bit of what Sir Ed so astutely observed. You know, civilizations in the last 10,000 years, and that's about how long we've had what we've called civilization. Before that, it was about a million years or more of hunting and gathering. And we did pretty well in that period. But with the advent of symbolic culture, market agriculture, the birth of the priest class and hierarchies, we've had one version or another of civilizations that fall. Well, they don't just fall. If you look at the history of it, what happens is, from the ancient Phoenicians and Egyptians onward, is the rich and powerful concentrate their wealth and power so greatly that they wreck everything. And that's the cycle that repeats. Civilizations don't just fall. And the reason this happens is because the human population, we as people, have yet to learn to be mature enough to govern ourselves without creating earthly systems of gods. The problem is not civilization or, you know, some cycle of change. There's really no evidence for that historically. I see it as this. The problem for 10,000 years has been the artificial human craving for authority, that we want freedom, but we don't want the responsibility for protecting it. We don't want the individual responsibility that goes with freedom. We want license, not liberty. We don't actually want genuine freedom. We want freedoms that are given to us by the authorities we crave. And if we're given that illusion, we will love our chains. And when we do that, which we've done over and over for thousands of years, the people we put into power are in no wise equipped mentally, emotionally, spiritually, or intellectually to handle that, to handle that power. I don't care who you elevate to the station of an earthly god. They may start out as a benevolent dictator, but they won't stay that way, because you've heard the phrase from Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is the issue. All of this is our fault. It's our fault because we have always taken the advantages of freedoms that are given to us without ever realizing that freedoms that are given to you can be taken away. It's only freedom that you seize as people, that you live every day, as Malcolm X said. Rights on paper mean nothing. Rights you don't live every day are an illusion. This is the issue. This is on us. This is our inherent weak psychological state of deferring our responsibility in the world for the state of the world onto artificial demagogues, whatever we call it. You can call it communism, or it takes many, many forms. They all end the same way, in disaster, because we refuse to accept the responsibility for how the world looks. It's on us. And we have a million excuses for not doing it. Well, I'm just an average person. I'm just a common person trying to make ends meet, and I just want to survive. Uh-uh. That's no excuse. If that's all your life is about, you're wasting it. What we mainly occupy our time with, in my view, is finding ways to waste our potential. That's our main activity. We defer the actual responsibilities and therefore the actual joys of life onto other people. Now, this has been ingrained in us by what we like to call civilization. We love to think of ourselves as this highly advanced, we're so far advanced, you know, the little evolutionary chart, you know, from the crawling sea amoeba to the walking upright Homo sapien. It's a myth. That's completely false. We are self-delusional. That's our greatest skill. We can't see realities. We live by false symbols, and we follow symbols instead of realities. Hunter-gatherers didn't have to do that. I would point out, hunter-gatherers, there's no evidence that they had art. They didn't need it, because their lived experience was so dynamic. Do you see? If you look at this historically, you know, get up on a cloud and look at it from the view of eternity, as Spinoza called it, you begin to see that the only people responsible for all of this are all of us. You know, the Aristotle, the philosopher, made the mistake, and this is the last thing I'll sort of point out, and we've been living with Aristotle's mistake ever since. He said, everything has its own essence. See, everything is separate. Wood can't be stone because wood has woodness and stone has stoneness, and
it's
you
stoneness,
can't be
yes.
like this person, you see. Right. Well, but it turns out we discovered with quantum physics, no, that's not right. Everything is the same thing. Everything is energy. We're all the same thing, and we're all the same people. And it works that way in every department of life. So if you don't like how things are, in what way have you contributed to that outcome? Because you sure did. You sure are every moment. We like to think of ourselves as separate from all this. That's a way to control us. That's what Aristotle invented it for. It's a control mechanism. No, you're responsible. I think that's the only solution to the human dilemma. You know, Sir Ed said, well, okay, you know, we'll go somewhere and there's the great good place. Look, I don't think that's possible anymore. You know, this is the global pivot to open corporate rule, to techno-feudalism, to open fascism everywhere. There's not going to be any place to hide from it. We're simply going to have to take responsibility, each one of us, for changing it. That's all. I don't see any other way.
Wow.
Do you?
that's my comment. Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, you Teresa. I
know,
really
it's
appreciate
amazing
your
thing,
forum.
You know, you don't expect a moment like this, but when you get stopped in your tracks, even though you think you know what you're thinking,
mm-hmm.
and then you realize, oh, you haven't begun to think yet. But thank you so much, Marcus, for giving us another perspective, and
thank
a perspective
you very
that
much, Eutrius.
We really, really need. We really need it. Thank you.
Thank
Brother
you.
David from Brooklyn, you're on next. You're up.
Good afternoon, Eutrius, and all our listeners.
Good afternoon.
You know, I kind of tuned in late. I was involved in something. And I think I'm going to enter in this thing, even though I didn't hear the original instructions. So far, what comes to my mind is very simple. And it is this. People here in this country, when I talk about the people, I'm talking about the 99%, not the oligarchy and the ruling elite, don't understand one thing. And the one thing they don't understand, and we really need to understand, is that the people of this country do not run the country. And that's, to me, very simple. The people that run the country are in that 1%. They control all the levers. Wherever you go, at whatever level, national, state, or local, and they run it in their interests. So we have to get it across to people that they have to take the power away from that 1% and start running a country that is operating in the interests of the masses of people that live here. And we don't have that. We have people who are completely confused with these bogus elections with this idea of representative so-called democracy, and all the levers that the ruling class, and I'm talking about the people that established the country from the beginning, the slaveholders and their buddies, to today. The place is run in the interests first for those who rule, not the people. That's the problem. So people have to get to the point where they understand that this so-called voting that they have and they call democracy, which is not democracy, which is plutocracy, and that when democracy is mentioned, it's just a question of lying enough about a word, and you start believing that you have what they call democracy, and you don't have it. The people do not run the country. It's not run in the interests of the masses of people. It's run in the interests of that 1% that it is at the top. So as long as people keep going along with this illusion, as I call it, that they're in charge and they're running and these representatives are doing what, that does not exist. This place is run for the benefit of the few at the expense of the many. That is the way I see it.
I get it. I get your point. It's a very strong point. But how is it possible to change it the way you outline it?
Well, it is not easy to change it. It is not easy to change it, as some people know, because all the levels of information, the so-called education, which is not, we don't get education, we get training in these schools. We don't have communication in terms of all the types of media that is giving the interests of the people the first priority. So people are loaded down with the propaganda and training they get from the ruling class to think that they have what they don't have. So as far as I can see, getting to your question, the only way it's going to happen is some sort of rebellion. I mean, a ruling class of 1% is not just going to give up easily. When people understand the system that they have, as you know, I call it throwing bones, is very effective. You know, I'm talking about the big bone that they threw during the Roosevelt administration and all the other bones that have come along. And if you notice, every bone that has been thrown out, they at one time, when possible, have tried to take it back. That's, you know, Social Security and Medicare and all those things. Medicare, I understand, 40% of it is now in what they call Medicare Advantage, which is some people call Medicare Disadvantage. So all those things are bone. The people who rule don't care anything about anybody. So the only time they'll throw out something is when there's some kind of threat to calm people down. They throw out a bone, and when the time comes back, they take it back, whether it's Taft-Hartley law or whatever. Those are all the ways of doing this to the people. So people have to get to the point where they understand that they don't run the country, and they have to react to that and deal with those people who are keeping this situation where the top 1% benefits and the rest of the people are struggling. There's no way that you're going to get any change with the current system of representative government and that sort of thing. It's not working. And I don't know when it would ever work because most of those people in those positions are bought off.
Well, what you have outlined, some people would say, is a direct threat to what we typically call democracy. And democracy is a cornerstone of American society.
Well, democracy in this society is an illusion. It's an illusion. You don't have democracy. Things run for the benefit of the ruling class, not for the people. If you had democracy, you'd have a society that would be a beautiful place for most of the people that live here. You wouldn't have any problems about unemployment. You wouldn't have any problems about health care. We don't have a health care system. We have a sick care system. You would have no problems about the social benefits that people need, like housing and the quality of the environment and whatnot. Everything would be in the interest of the masses of people. But the thing is run by using the technique that an oppressor will use, which we call divide and conquer. And that's working like a charm here. It's working beautifully for the ruling class. You just chop people up in different groups, and you have them contending against each other, and you get all these things that get the attention away from the real culprit. And I give this example of what happened with that young person who murdered a few people up in Michigan. Everybody's attention is on that. Oh, yes, that's very sad. But that takes the attention away from the ruling class. And I'm not discounting that as being a tremendous problem. But, those type of incidents happen all over the world. They happen in Russia and in China and in various other places where a disturbed person will do mass murder and so forth. But the point is, that's not the thing to pay attention to. The thing to pay attention to is the fact that you got a ruling class that runs the country. You don't have democracy. You have a plutocracy, which is not democracy. And you got to understand the situation you're in and get from under those people who are in that 1% who run everything.
Well, thank you, Brother David. Thanks for contributing today. It's always worth listening to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Retreats. Hopefully you can hear me better this time.
Oh, good.
And
yes, much
oh, good,
better.
Yes.
Much better.
I'm calling from another phone. So first of all, I really enjoy and love your show because of the diversity of perspectives. And while I do not agree with any of the callers today totally, I do take bits and pieces and form a kind of bricolage, that I think has some meaning to me personally. And I think that we must have the courage to kind of stare into the abyss. We're at a very interesting time in the history of this nation and the world, where through all of the potential of technology that we have all these devices and we get so much information, and it seems quite overwhelming most of the time. But I have I really have a faith that, especially in our young people throughout the globe, I really believe in them, and what they're about to inherit and step up to the challenges that are facing their generation and all of us in particular. And I really like what you said earlier about how we will not live. And I think that comes down to a choice and that we all must make in terms of how we're confronted with these times and with COVID and a lot of the maladies occurring around the world in our society, all the injustices. I think we have to make those decisions and choices. And I've made that somewhat myself by, at least for a while, removing myself from the illusion, one of your callers mentioned, of New York City, at least part of the time. I live between New York City and Connecticut, and where I've kind of taken a refuge from the overwhelming madness of it all and the insult of it all when you have million-dollar condos going up literally next to housing projects and just the unsustainability that the city has become. And so that's where I found my refuge, a few miles from New York, a little place where I went to one of the Ivy League schools up there, where I found some peace and being able to sort of look at everything from a different perspective, while still having a real foothold in this illusory city of New York. But I do have faith, and that's all we can do. And Martin King has a book called "Where Do We Go From Here: Chaos or Community?" And that's what we're confronted with now. There's going to be some difficult days ahead, as he said. And, you know, we have the onerous ogre of the orange man out there who's spiraling around and trying to create chaos, a continued chaos. And we have to have really the courage to really look into the abyss and look into the face of these monsters that are just not with the Trump, but, you know, around the world and in our own midst. So that's my perspective. I do have faith. I know we have some real challenges, but, we must stand up, and there's too much that we've gone through and have really done for our families. And
this faith that you have, that you've referred to,
right?
What is it? What is it about? And where is it going to take us?
I see it in, again, going back to young people that I've worked with, and then I see just at random. I mean, just the potential and the joy and possibilities of their lives. Yesterday, I saw I had a moment of just witnessing this young kid, this little young white boy with his black nanny, and just the joy that he was having in the moment, just skipping. And I watched him for 5 minutes, just skipping down the street. And I was like, wow. You know, what a joy that a child is having. And I see other young children, teenagers, and young adults, and just the potential that they have, and we cannot give up on them.
Do you think that child having all this fun, you know, just celebrating where he is in a particular at a particular time,
mm-hmm,
to the fullest, and the nanny,
right,
have the same perspective or derive the same benefits of the society? Do you think so?
Absolutely not. And and unfortunately, there is no fairness, and there is no fairness in that situation. And that nanny is West Indian or African or maybe African American. She has her own children. She has her own grandchildren. But this is how she survives. But at the same time, it shows the capacity for, as we as black and minority people have had throughout history, to truly love and care for others unlike us, and in a very significant way. No, there is no equity there in that situation. by any means. But and I have no solution for that. But all I can say is that, especially with our young people who, you know, in this country and around the world face so many challenges, we have to believe in them. We have to support them. And, you know, that's the only solution. You can't give
up. Well, this is something that I think is worth exploring more deeply. Because if there is no equity, isn't this whole thing about equity? We're talking democracy is equity. Fairness is equity.
I laugh because there has never been equity ever throughout the history of the world. And even in the Bible, I believe it says somewhere, the poor will always be among us. There's no justice in that statement, but that's a fact. And it's not that we should accept it. I mean, I don't accept when I see people literally sleeping straight out, you know, in the subway every day and on the streets. I don't accept that. But that's a fact. It's a fact that we as a society, you know, must in a conscious way, in a deliberate way, you know, fight to redress. The current leadership we have in this country right now is not up to that task. And they are putting us as a people, as a nation, you know, through just some very, very difficult times where there are solutions at hand, but they refuse to, you know, to make those solutions for the benefit of the, you know, of the overall society. And so taking from Brother David, who speaks in a revolutionary tone sometimes, I must agree with that. There will be a revolution coming. Not necessarily a violent one. I think we're on the precipice of that. I believe we will avoid that. But at the same time, we as a society will be challenged to take another path. And that's going to be, you know, our test.
Well, thank you. And we'll have to leave it right there. You responded really well to time. Good timing.
Thank you so much.
So you brought it to an excellent conclusion. Thank you so much. Thank you all for calling in and contributing. We will continue this discussion because it is so important. Even though in our daily travails as we go about our business, we don't think of it that way. But it's important to stop every now and then and think about what is the meaning of our existence. How are we relating to this concept of a society? Are we part of society? Is society part of us? These are very complicated questions. But look at the extraordinary quality of tutelage that we got today. And I thank you all for that. We come back to each other tomorrow. God willing, and the creek don't rise. Bye-bye.